Then it's 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
If it's 2024, it's time to tell the damn story. And welcome to Tell the Damn Story. I'm Chris Ryan, and this is the legendary Alex Simmons, creator of Blackjack, writer of Scooby-Doo, and Archer, and all sorts of different characters that I'm not sure if I'm legally allowed to pronounce. How are you, Alex?
I always think I'm ready for you, and I never am. Hey, Chris Ryan. And by the way, folks, in case you can't tell, the nut on the other end of this experience is my buddy and full-time author now, and also a hybrid author publisher, Mr. Christopher Ryan, who put in decades training other people to be great writers, and now is totally focused on taking over the writing world with a series about, how would you call it? Would you call them paranormal detectives?
Supernatural
investigators.
Yes, that's what we're going with, yes.
Yes, he's got a sci-fi novel that he's worked on. It's going to be coming out again. And you've got the 6-book extravaganza. It's an anthology called Soul Scream.
That's right.
See, so he's been busy.
A little busy. But we're going in a different direction today.
Yes, we are. We're going this way. Yeah.
We're going a whole different direction. We're going down south, and we're going over to the cozy side of things. We're going to talk to a very special guest, but it's Alex's job to introduce her. So
yes,
here we go.
I am. Yes, it is. And this week we have a returning special guest, because if you're watching this, you get to see how pretty she is. If you're listening, just imagine Ms. Shannon Simons. Hey, yes. Shannon.
Welcome, Shannon.
I didn't behave last time, so I have to come back and do better.
Oh, no. You said if you came back, you'd do even more outrageous stuff. So come on. We're expecting that. Shannon is an author of a number of things, a series of YA novels, which was the Cozy Mystery series, right? So Cozy Mystery series. And we're going to talk about that a little bit, but we're also going to talk about, because I'm holding it up here, her new book, Booked for Murder. And this is now a Balefire Bay cozy mystery series. So some people are going, what's the cozy part? You're going to find out. You're going to find out. But murder and cozy, do they go together? Yes, they do. And you're going to find out
in
how.
In a very specific way.
Yes, right.
Very specific way. And I'll tell you what, there is a voracious audience out there for cozy mysteries. People find out they like cozy. They tend to be readers, dedicated readers, maybe sometimes quick readers. And before you know it, they've read all your books and they're knocking on your social media saying, when's the next one coming out?
Yeah. Oh, you can't go fast enough, right?
Yeah.
No, it's like they're consuming.
A happy problem. I'm sure it's a little tense, but a happy problem to have. I kind of on the mark there, Shannon?
You are. And you know what? I love cozy readers. So I have a pretty good newsletter and I'll send it out. And I always am polling them, like the book's name. I gave them 2 names and I said, give me some suggestions. And then we had a vote. They gave me 45 suggestions that were great. I know. And then 2 of them rose to the top. Not mine. Mine got no votes at all. I can't name them. I can write the story. And so we did the vote and it named the book. And then I thought, so we did 3 covers and I put the covers up and they picked this one. They picked it a little different than I took the idea that they liked from the others. So they're
Let me clarify 2 things. One, Shannon, where are you in the world?
I'm in Seaside, Oregon. So I'm on the northern coast of Oregon, about a block off the beach. On a good day.
A block, by the way.
I was wrong about south. We went west.
Yeah, right. That. I wanted to clarify that. She is in Oregon, not that far from Utah, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. Very cool.
Right?
Oh, 14-hour drive.
Well, we won't be doing that.
Sharon,
but I found a $100 round-trip flight, so I go see the grandkids.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Can I do one more thing, Chris?
Yeah, sure you can.
Okay. For those of you out there who are going, what the heck is a cozy mystery? Is this something new? I will have 2 words for you. Agatha Christie.
Yeah,
So if you have ever read any Agatha Christie, if you've ever seen any either British-based or American-based movies about based on an Agatha Christie stories, you will understand that it's usually a collection of people who are pulled together someplace they shouldn't be, and folks start dying. But not bloody. It's not gory. It's very cozy. It's very neat.
Tidy. We're just clean about it.
Yeah. Shannon, am I correct that the violence takes place off stage?
Yes, it's supposed to. I think I have one little moment where you see a little bit of, but everything was happily ever after and somebody survives. But it's a murder. It's pretty much off stage or tidy.
I do want to talk more about the writing, but if you don't mind a follow-up question, you said you asked your cozy followers, or I don't know if they're fans, whatever you want to call them, and got 45 responses.
Maybe more, yeah.
Now, we talk often on this show about building an audience, contacting an audience, and engaging an audience. And when I heard that number of 45, I definitely knew I wanted to ask you, how do you personally do it? Where do you meet your fans online? Or is it, you got 45, is that purely from your mailing list? Is that from social media? Which is it?
They're all some people love social media. Some people love newsletters and getting to know you more. And the idea for the vote actually came from Richard Evans, who does Author Ready little tutorials. And that was his. I went to a retreat with them. And it was fun. My newsletter has about 12,000 people on it right now, which is good. And there's 4,500 that are super active. So like once a month, I'll send it out to the big group. And then the small group gets a little more because they're really interactive. And sometimes it's a 50% open and read, and sometimes it's 70%. It just depends. So I try to, it's personal. And they write back and I write to them. And when my dad died recently, and I put it in my newsletter, I said, I'm sorry, this is going to be short. My father passed away. He was a great guy. And I told him a little bit about him. It just makes me cry. I got so many nice emails back from
That's
people
beautiful.
That you get to know because you hear from them every once in a while. I just had one of them say, I'm a proofreader and you need help.
That's fantastic.
I can help you. And Pamela, and I was just.
Way to go, Pamela. We all need a little proofreading help.
Yeah.
I got your back, Shannon. Right.
So
send me the manuscript first, dear.
Yeah.
How long have you had the newsletter?
I started it in 2020, and it was small and built pretty slowly. And I hooked up with a group of cozy mystery authors through Aconite Cafe, and I did a giveaway, a really fun one, I thought. I did like a scavenger hunt. So on the coast, I hid a bunch of boxes, and then I hid some inland where I knew people that had books in them from the Cozy Mysteries by the Sea. And it had things like t-shirts and different stuff. And then I would give a hint like where the box was and tell people to send me a picture of them finding the box and something I can post. And then I gave away. It was the biggest giveaway I've ever done. Probably not my budget today, but it was then. And it was like a $250 Amazon card, and it just a big box of swag that was super fun. And so I did some build up to that, and I used a raffle copter for the giveaway, which built subscribers for my initial newsletter up to probably 3,000 or 4,000. And then Aconite Cafe and also Clean Authors with Lisa Kendrick, they've just been good places to get to know people.
How would you explain Clean Authors? I bathe.
Yeah.
But is that what we're talking about here?
I do, babe. But they are, Lisa Kendrick started it. I hope I'm saying her name right. It's a group of quite a few, actually, people whose books where the violence is off stage. There's an 11-year-old. There's no swearing, no graphic sex. No, it's like a Hallmark level.
Right.
Relationship. And it's a great list to be on, especially when I was finding books for my kids to read. It's hard to know. And I was a mom that didn't want them reading just any old thing.
Sure.
It's fun, actually. My kids, I don't know, they read a lot, like a lot. We didn't have a television on. I didn't TV. I didn't keep cable. And I remember hearing from one of the teachers something I didn't know. He said, I gave them this book and it's pretty graphic. And he says, your daughter said she wouldn't read that. She brought in her own book. I don't remember what it was, probably Harry Potter. And she sat out in the hall and read while we worked on that book. Okay, that's my kid.
That's good. That's good. That's good.
So that's, it's a little group like that.
So the newsletter is one thing. Mm-hmm. Wait, so, Alex, you're muted. We'll wait for Alex.
There we go. I'm sorry. You said, you mentioned an organization that you joined. Not other than the clean author.
The cafe.
Yeah. What was that?
Aconite Cafe, Aconite. It's got a reader's tribe and a writer's tribe. And then Jessica Thompson just did a launch for me, and she was phenomenal. That's how I met you.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, Jessica introduced us. Yes.
Help me get out there, which is, authors are introverts often. I might be one. And it's hard to get yourself out there a little bit. And she does all that work for you, calling and asking. And that's the hard part for me, is asking. Yeah.
Yes, that is. You need people like her, because that is almost insurmountable sometimes.
It is.
Yeah. As I was saying just before, we noticed that Alex was
muted.
Can't have that. The newsletter is very impressive, and it's, I'd say, a good portion of the battle, but you have to deliver. So let's talk about Cozy Mysteries.
Okay.
Why them? Tell us your secret origin as a cozy mystery writer.
We talked about it a little last time, but I will tell you again.
Yeah, we're going to update for those people who, like me, miss that.
So
it's our last thrilling episode. Yes.
Very last episode. I was raised on the beach in Portland. So we lived in Portland because my grandmother, the great aunts, everybody were teachers. And then in the summer, my great grandmother bought a house out here up on the water called Lassie Haim. And there was, at the time, about 9 of us cousins at that point in time, and a bunk room in the basement. And I don't remember wearing shoes in the summer. I do remember having to go somewhere and mom realizing I'd grown out of my shoes. And so she had my tennis shoes off so my toes could stick out so we could get there.
That's great.
What?
Be a tale in two Bronxites that way. That sounds exotic to us.
Oh, really? It was fun. We were always building forts, and I learned to swim out in the ocean with my dad and my uncle.
So between your barefoot excursions and swimming.
It rained.
Yes. And was that the excuse to find a love of reading and writing, or?
There were so many people there that were avid readers. Every day the newspaper was passed around, talked about everything that was in it. I went out and did a little politics at age 9 because I felt so strongly about what was happening with Nixon. That's how old I am.
But 26.
Were you pro or anti-Nixon?
Anti.
Okay.
I wanted McCarthy, whatever his name was.
That's great. McGovern. McGovern. You wanted McGovern. Yeah.
That's wrong.
I have all her albums.
Yeah. Yes. That's the communist. And I just learned to read. I think I was reading at 5, and I know that I never was in a reading class. They'd send me to read with high schoolers. And so reading came really easily for me. And so when it rained, they had this shelf of books. And what was in the shelf is pretty much what you got, unless we could get to a library beforehand. Mm-hmm. It's full of Agatha Christie's.
There you go.
Yeah, those were the ones I wanted. So they'd also get like the Reader's Digest books where you'd have 2 or 3 novels in a book.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be, Where's Agatha? So they did have Ozma of Oz, Wizard of Oz, and I did read that, but I wanted Agatha Christie really young. I'm probably 8 or 9, maybe.
What do you think attracted you to Agatha? It's a very different style, the Oz books and Agatha.
Yeah, I know. And I always want to write a fantasy someday. But I think it's the thinking part, the mystery.
Mm. Sure.
I really wanted to figure that out before the end, and the people and the place and the, yeah, just all of it. But mostly the solving the mystery and the people, the relationships, like Miss Marple in the little town. Like, how many people can you kill in one town?
That's true.
With Miss Marple around, quite a few.
Town's getting empty.
Caribbean.
As a matter of fact, she never came under suspicion. I'm curious about that.
Yeah.
Wherever she went, people died. Think about that.
And then she came in and
Ended up.
Pushing it. Blame on someone else. Yeah. So I'm glad Chris asked that question and you shared what you did, because one of my questions here was, and this is going to segue into some of the writing you've already done, is in both the YA series, the cozy mysteries that you did for the younger audience, and for in this new book, Book for Murder, right? There are two very strong components. There's the sea and there's libraries. So there's water and books. And so now, in you telling us a little bit about your growing up time, I'm seeing this connection. Is this sort of the thing that happens in much of what you write? Is you're somehow tying it back to those two elements?
Wait, so in my very first book, which wasn't a cozy, it was like a women's fiction, there's a storm. And we had that storm in 2007 or 97 here. It was the first hurricane wind on the North Coast ever. And we were out of power for 5 days. Trees were down. Nobody could get to us. And I loved every minute of it because there's something wrong with me. But so in that book, you feel the storm building. And when everything comes together, it comes together in the middle of the storm. And in one of the cozies that I wrote, we've had a couple tsunami warnings, and you would think that just be horrific. And it is sometimes. It's a little nerve wracking, right? But for the locals, it can be a party. It's a little odd.
Okay.
It means you just meet out at Camp 18 on Highway 26. You better get out of town before the siren blows, or you're not going to get anywhere. You got to walk. So there is a tsunami in one of my books, and it's like the climax. So the things that I know, like the ocean, like in one of the books, somebody's missing and then they find pieces floating in the tide. So they assume that they've gone out to sea, but you never make assumption.
No, not especially not in a mystery series. No. Okay.
That's one Shannon rule. Use what you know, what you've experienced. Yeah. Now, I'm going to take a leap of faith here that you yourself are not a murderess. So then how do we get that part? Is it because you loved Agatha so much, you wanted to emulate that style and you merged it with what you know? How did those things, those elements come together?
I'm testing out murder. No, I have not. I don't know.
Easy to get rid of bodies out here.
It was after the Tell the Damn Story episode aired that the FBI came around. I don't know why.
I was researching nuclear bombs. When I had to go to work full time, that was particularly gut-wrenching for me. I had six children, and I loved being with them. And I would always, any work that I did was like preschool, Head Start, anything that I could do around their schedule. I didn't get enough college. I got some college in with them, with all five of my five kids. I did my first little thing and then the other one later. But they were so important to me that I just worked part-time. But I also worked in child development because I figured I was way over my head with that many kids. So I needed to know what to do with them. So those are the classes I took, and that was the education I had. And really, I ended up in a kind of rough divorce, and I ended up getting really interested in sexual assault survivors because I was a survivor of I shouldn't have lived. It was a very rare event with a stranger. And so that kind of gave me this passion for, why are we not taking care of these people better? Why aren't we doing better with this? Why are we just, at the time, we're just not doing a good job of taking care of survivors. And I felt that. And when I lived out of state, I did this little grassroots organization with a couple of women that were in the same spot I was. And we did some legislating, and we set up a conference, and we actually did a conference that includes some stuff on ritualistic abuse because people didn't believe it happened. And at the time, one of the therapists that we knew was on the front of the local newspaper saying there's no such thing as incest. So we were just in a bad place right then. They were trying to pass a law that you couldn't convict anybody unless you had DNA evidence. And so I felt pretty strongly about what was happening. Then we moved out here, and I thought, good, now I could just be a preschool teacher. Life is great. And one of my jobs was on a grant, a United Way grant, and that grant was coming to an end. And the woman that wrote it, we didn't get it again. I didn't write it, but she tried. We just didn't get it again. And so I was in this building down on the docks, which is a great place to work. And that building is in my first series in a couple of places. I love that. It's gone. But I loved it. And I was going, there's a store that had these cardamom cookies and sandwiches. And I had six kids, so it's not like I was going to lunch every day.
Right.
Once a month, I go in there and get a sandwich. And every couple of days, I get one of those delicious cookies because they were really good. And so I knew the gal that ran it, and we'd talk. And she just asked me one day, so how's it going? I said, I think this is my last cookie because the grant's coming to an end and I won't be here next week. I'm going to miss these. I'm going to have to drive up here and get them because it's 20 minutes from the house. And the gal behind me goes, oh, are you looking for a job? And I said, yes. And she said, what do you do? And I said, early childhood education. Right now I'm writing manuals. I'm training in-home childcare providers. And I'd written like the notebook of how to do taxes, how to do your stuff. And she goes, oh, they're looking for a child advocate upstairs. And I'm like, oh, I can advocate for children. That's great. Didn't even know what it was. And so I applied, and the job description was really vague. It was like, be with the kids during a support group, be with them while their parents are working on stuff. And I thought, piece of cake. And if I had to go to work full time, I had to love it.
Sure.
If I got to be away from my kids, and I really wanted something a little flexible, I got the job. And
congratulations.
We were taking care of survivors of domestic and sexual assault.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fake.
I was there like 2 or 3 days. I wasn't there very long, like a week maybe, tops. And a woman had a heart attack in the office. And I just jumped into my mom mode. You just do. Just took care of it. My boss says, you have a new assignment. You're going to help us start the domestic sexual assault response team. Uh-huh. And you're going to be the advocate. And they had a group of, I don't know, there was all of the police chiefs, the district attorney, child welfare, mental health had gotten together. They were going to do a new model where somebody went out with the police at the time of the assault. Like they would go to the assault and they'd call
us. Right. Mm-hmm.
And they put together a book about how that was going to go. And they were going to do the first trial run. And that was me. I was the advocate. So I got a lot of training really fast, really fast, ridiculously fast. And then I went and did what I knew. And I ended up being on call. Don't tell the Department of Labor, for three years, 24 hours a day. But I was also able to go to my son's football game. And then...
And if a call came, you'd have to deal. But yeah.
Yeah, it was a little flexible. I could leave to go to a call and come back. And I finally felt like I was doing something of worth and value and a job. And I loved it. We ended up doing pretty well. They had us train other agencies in the state with the district attorneys.
Wow, it's impressive.
Yeah, I got to do a little thing that changed HUD housing nationwide. That was fun.
Wow.
But the big thing was that all the other agencies fell off. And then it was the law enforcement. They knew they could call me and I come out and take care of this crying person and all these kids or this man that was upset, whoever we were responding to at the time. And so you get to know all of the officers really well. And in all honesty, that's not always safe. And so there were some moments. Yeah, people die in domestic violence. And
yes.
Review what happened. What did I do wrong? What could have been done better? Why did this happen? Did we know her? Did we see her? Yeah, I got to know closely. Yeah.
Again, on Tell the Damn Story, we often discuss the need to fill oneself up, right? Whether it's with other books or experiences and all that. And I hope I'm not overstepping bounds, but you sound like you were full to bursting with experiences you could use. Now, of course, that wasn't the reason why you did this job. You did this job because you were called to it. And that folk is a completely different, almost a different life than the writing life. And I want to honor you by acknowledging that. It also takes a toll.
Oh.
The amount of emotion that you have to deal with, you carry that stuff with you. So let's talk about how all that emotion, whether or not that was tied to you going to creative outlets. And then I want to see, I am fairly sure it got intense on a regular basis
and
for you. And you chose a genre that keeps the intense off the page. That, to me, is a fascinating evolution. I'd love if you would be kind enough to talk about how that happened.
Probably. And it's familial. We solve stress and emotion through inappropriate laughter. Well, I had my mother, took her to bars, broke her ankle. We're in the hospital. And doctor's like, why is she laughing? Why is she having so much fun? I said, that's how we resolve things in my life. You never know. Life is like that. And honestly, some really funny things happen when you're doing that kind of work. And you just have to laugh. There's nothing you can do other than laugh. It's a little bit like the old show MASH. It's kind of
how you're... Yes.
It absolutely led to why I write. So I liked writing. Writing was great. I could only write poetry because I had 6 kids. I only had time.
Haiku. Only had time for haiku.
Yeah. And so when I had to leave that job for a very good reason, I still had that passion. And I had to go get a job with health insurance that was really good. And the health insurance on that job was like a third of my paycheck. And I needed to resolve that too. And there were some other reasons that are bigger. But when I left that job, I still wanted to do work in that area. And so the one thing that's inspired my first book was the need to reach more people, to let people know that survivors are incredible women, like, and men, whoever they are. Most of the time, they are doing things that you do not see to get through. And that you're making all these judgments about. You think, why does she stay? Why doesn't she just leave? Why doesn't she hit back? Those are the questions I got over and over again. My first book actually answers both those questions through an advocate's eye that did the job like I did.
What's the name of that book?
Oh, it's Safe House. And that's more of a women's fiction, and it's got some Christian components in it. I usually keep it separate. But when I had written that, and then I'd written a book, I did some volunteer work around safe sex trafficking and some training, education training.
Sex trafficking, not safe sex trafficking.
Not safe sex.
No, sex trafficking. Okay.
And then I love cozy mysteries. Like I do. I love them. And so I decided I wanted to write one, but I just can't quite figure out how not to write about from a survivor's perspective. Maybe because I am one. Mm. Or maybe because I just am so regularly impressed by what I see happen.
Sure. Oh.
When I see, I did trauma recovery groups, and we finally decided we had to do a professional group because there were therapists and professionals, directors, agencies, teachers who have the same exact story as the people that are visible to you, and but deal with it in a little different way. And so what I finally learned, this is just Shannon 101. This is just my belief system, because I was in a small county. There's only 36,000 of us. So I was on every road and every apartment and every trailer park and every big house. Pretty much in the county. When you have money and things aren't, you want to keep things a secret. You don't want people to know you're beating your wife, or you don't want people to know that you're poisoning your husband, or whatever it is. You're going to try to buy a house that's a little isolated. You're definitely a building with paper thin walls. And you have the money that when you hit court, you're going to walk away scot-free, because I've seen it over and over again.
Yeah.
And slapping a little therapy, and then we'll wipe that out.
Ain't that America? Yep. But,
and when you don't have money, you're living in apartments with thin walls, trailer parks with no walls. You're living in places where you're close to your neighbors, or your houses are close together. Things are tighter. And there are people that will call the police around you out of desperation or fear. If you have a lot of money, you're in more trouble, because you are more isolated, and you can
facilitate what you want to accomplish.
So you mean, as a victim, if there's a lot of money, you're in worse trouble.
More trouble.
That's fascinating.
First of all, chances are you don't have money, or he's controlled your money, or he's cut you off from relatives, or you're isolated, and nobody's going to believe you. Because he's a judge, or he's a teacher, or he's outstanding citizen of the
business
year.
Business leader, community. Yeah.
Whatever, pastors. And so nobody's going to believe you. A. B. You've been told if you leave, you've got nothing, and I'm going to go after the kids in court, and you're going to lose your children. And that's very real. That is very, watched it way too much. And I have watched people that have money get three, months and a hand slap over breaking people's faces. It is much harder to be a moneyed person in violence. They have reach and capacity.
They're so really- would you say that, and again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but much of what you're describing right now is unbelievably intense and frustrating and generating a little bit of a little pit of anger in me to a certain degree, right? I'm thinking of donning something with a mask and a cloak and going out and dealing some justice. But for you, you had to deal with these things face to face, realistically. The memories are sitting in your head, and then you sit down to a typewriter or a pad and pen, and you write what you wrote in terms of, again, the cozy mysteries. What was that like? What did that feel like? Were you consciously going, I'm putting the violence over here? Or did you organically flow into that almost as if it was some sort of therapy for you?
I don't know if it's therapy, but it was like, it is when you've been there, you probably lose your filter. You know what I mean? It's like you're desensitized. Mm-hmm. It's anybody who's watched horror movies knows the first time you watch a horror movie, you're like, oh, you're up all night. You can't stop thinking about it. And if you're a real horror movie buff, 50 horror movies later, you're looking for the zipper and for the makeup, right? And it's no longer. And I think that's what it's like. Maybe it was for me, for police officers, for people who do that work. You get a little desensitized to what's happening around you. But at the same time, it's what I care about. And so in this book, the first chapter is probably not a normal cozy first chapter. She's been in a shelter and she's leaving and she's got to hide. And she does what most survivors do. She makes a mistake and the thread starts unraveling. And that's where kind of the mystery in her life come together.
And that's books for murder. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, that's book.
Actually doesn't trust anybody. She can't trust anybody. And by the end of the book, that's changed.
Let's talk about that. I would love to talk. And we did this in the previous episode. We talked about the YA series, but let us talk about this.
Let's talk about books for murder.
When did this come out?
Very quietly in November, because last year I tried to put a book out in December. Of course, it's all Christmas. Yeah. I just need to get it done and get it out. And I wanted the newsletter, people were wanting it. And Ingram Spark, I've worked with them and I've also worked with Amazon. And Amazon was telling me, so I uploaded it on the 10th. It didn't show up until after the 20th. So it's like they're glutted at that time of year and getting it out.
Right.
I picked out a launch date, hoped that was my launch date, but I had a really hard time committing to it because I was watching what was happening. So we did it quite then. Yeah. Yep. That's what
So you put out through Ingram Spark and Amazon?
Oh, this time I did Amazon because Ingram Spark was even farther out and I just didn't want to wait. And
Ingram Spark seems to be going through some changes. So, yeah. So you are independently published?
This time, yeah. Yeah.
This time, yeah. What effect did that have on your production and on your proofreading and development? Since you have a lot of beta readers, how did you handle all that?
Yes. Probably not perfectly, but I tried. I had the blessing of the newsletter, and so I reached out and got ARC readers. And Then you get feedback, and then I totally rewrote everything after I got their feedback because I decided, oh, this is good feedback. And then I had to have people reread it again. And then I do have a review crew for launch. Not huge, not big enough, but it's a good one. About 100 people or so.
It's how many?
100.
100 people.
I have 100.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I just get the reviews up. That would be great. So I think the difference between being traditionally published and being published on my own. My first book was named Saving Grace because the main character was Grace. When I turned it in for traditional publishing and the cover, I wanted like something ocean because it's all on the beach, okay. The storm, hopefully. And when I turned it in, they changed the name to Safe House and put a much darker cover than I probably would have on it. And I didn't feel like I really had a voice in it. Now I would probably say, you're making a mistake because my second book is being called Finding Hope and they go together. So Saving Grace, Finding Hope.
Mm.
And 3 months after it came out, another book called Safe House came out by a really well-known author. And just, I was like, flipped it. It taught me something. And by the second book, I held my ground. And I actually published the second one on my own. because it was about sex trafficking. Everybody said, nobody wants to read about that. It's too hard. We don't even want to talk about it. Because this was 2018 and nobody was talking about it. And then with the Cozy Mysteries, I sent it in and I said, look, I can't afford to publish one book a year. It's COVID. I'm home. And I quit my job a week before stuck in the house.
No.
It was like, it was just the perfect storm. But it was fine. Like, I was totally fine. I'd gotten a really nice severance package and a non-disclosure agreement. So I was home writing for a while, but you need to make money. And I said, so please reject my book because I have three others behind it, almost ready to go. Like, these two are ready to go. The third one was almost ready to go. And I want to rapid release them. And they said, okay, we've got two weeks. And then they got back to me and said, no, we want it. And I was like, rats. But then I told them what I wanted to do. And they're like, what is this rapid release? And I said, rapid release is the way that authors build an audience. You put the first book out. And even if somebody gets the third or fourth book, they come back to read the first book.
Right.
And it's how you meet people, which is what
I'm
saying.
And this was a series?
This was
the name?
It's By the Sea, the YA series.
I'm sorry, one more time?
YA series, Cozy Mysteries by the Sea.
Thank you. Every now and then something in the sound glitches out, so I just wanted to make sure that was clear. Okay.
I had plugged in my good mic. Hence, they called me back, and we had a meeting, and they rapid released my books.
Oh, that's great.
And
what size was this publishing house?
They were medium.
Yeah, because a larger one wouldn't do anything but what they decide to do. It's sometimes advantageous to have a smaller, I want to say nubile, but not really the word I'm looking for, but more flexible. Let's go that way.
Yeah.
In their plan, in their policies.
Did
you meet success with the rapid release?
I think so. We got a book into Costco. That was fun. And the books were selling. And we got audiobooks out. And then they decided, and they were probably the bulk of my marketing because they were in bookstores like Deseret, all kinds of. And then they stopped publishing fiction.
Okay.
They still have some fiction and they have my fiction. And I've not pulled it from them because why? Right. I'd have to cover it, read everything in it. But the cool thing is that they've opened up this app. It's like Kindle Unlimited.
Yes.
Their books and their audio. And they called me up and they said, can we have the rest of your books on our app? So they did take the rest of my books. And I said, it's a non-exclusive contract. Mm-hmm. And then right before that, my editor was super sweet. She took too long to look at a book. And then she wrote me back. She goes, I really want this, but we're not doing fiction. And so that kind of broke my contract, which was really okay. Because you can go a little faster when you're self-publishing.
Yes.
Which brings us back to book.
There we go. Segway some us here at Tell the Damn Story.
So
snap that, punch that, and subscribe button because Alex knows how to segue.
That's
right.
Yeah.
So you were talking about the opening of the book, which I read, and your lead character's name is Ivy. And within those first few paragraphs, you get very clearly that whatever has happened to her, she's in trouble. Yeah. And she's in over her head. There's no sense of covert agent or a feisty cop in New York City. There's none of that. There's this person who is about to run for her life. Mm-hmm. And also you give us a sense of a relationship that's gone horribly wrong and a few other things, all within the first page or two. Mm-hmm. And when you were talking a little while ago about some of your experiences and the experiences of the people that you were trying to help, it all just wove into this very clear image of your background and your experiences and then developing the world that this character is now moving through. So I see the thing, as you said, write what you know. What was it like for you writing this novel?
I probably had more fun with this one than the others. It was also at a really difficult time in my life because I got divorced in the middle of it and... Yeah, there were some really tough things happening, but I really love Ivy. I really do. She's going to go somewhere. I love a character that changes over a series.
Mm.
I think maybe she's a lot like me a little bit. So I really relate to her. And I will never give you like graphic things that happened to her. I'll give you a little snippet of some ways that he's threatened her or controlled her. Like, but the important thing is that her trust is shattered, A. And if she doesn't lay low, and I'll just tell you, because it says in the first chapter, he's in law enforcement and he has a long reach and he has friends in the area that have even a further reach.
His connections that you indicate in this first chapter, his connections, you really think going off the grid may not be enough. It's just he can reach out to people in various places that seem to have huge nets. And so she's really got a challenge on her hand. And you don't leave us. I'm not spoiling anything by what I'm about to say, folks, because it's on the back cover, too. You don't leave it there. You don't leave it with this poor person having to deal with that and being, in effect, tracked or stalked by somebody at that level. But then where she runs for a haven turns out to be just as dangerous.
And it probably wouldn't have been dangerous if she just kept her mouth shut and not poked around to see what was going on.
It's like you're running from bears and you enter this cave and there are lions in there. You know? So, gee, which way do I go to get clawed and eaten?
She goes to this. She gets on a bus to leave. So she lays a false trail. She thinks she's all set because she's very smart. She was a research librarian. And she knows him and knows the way he thinks. So she uses some credit cards to go this way and some to go that way. And then she goes with her new stuff and goes to a new town. And the person, she gets on the bus and an older woman gets on and annoyingly sits right next to her and starts talking. She's like, I just want to sleep. But the woman, it's during COVID. It's at the end of COVID. COVID is how she got into the relationship. That's how short it was. But a lot of people did because they were alone and they were lonely and it was hard. Mm. And of course, it blew apart as things evolved because it was not a good idea. And Agnes, this woman on the bus, is telling her she's going to Portland to get a librarian job, either at the university or at the library. And she just lay low with her new name and her new identity and her new diploma. And Aggie tells her, you don't want to live in Portland, which is what I would tell you right now. It was in really bad shape after COVID, really bad shape. The riots were just out of control. And it's just... Downtown it's really suffering. And I love Powell books like so much, but everything around it is in bad shape. People are struggling. And so Agnes is telling her, she goes, where are you going to stay? Oh, I don't know. I just thought I'd find an apartment to rent. She goes, do you know what rents are right now? And because rents are like through the roof in Portland. I don't know how they are wherever you are, but they're high right now.
There are no roofs.
the pretty little apartments right down here that are like one room are $1,400 on the coast. And in Portland, it's worse. And Ivy has money, but she has to be really careful about how she spends it, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Agnes says, you know what? I have this friend and he's been trying to get someone help him. He's got a new house and he's built a library, put it together, and he needs some help with some things. And I think he would let you stay in one of the cabins on his property. And I think this would be a great job for you. And Ivy's just thinking, I just need a place to stop off so I can figure out what direction I'm going. So she goes with her, and that's where the story starts.
Yeah.
When
this is the first book of a new series.
Yeah.
Do you have a plan for how many volumes, or is it open ended? Or
I think it's open ended right now. I know I will do three.
Okay, so three minimum. Yeah.
If they're going well, then I'll do more. I'll move on to the next thing.
So you have Book for Murder is out now. How are we on the writing of book two or book three? Where are you at?
I plot, like a deeply plot, and I write characters. The characters is where I start, and then I do a relationship map.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have to find the red herrings in those relationships. And then I write a plot. So the plot's in my head, and the relationship map's just about done. I need one more red herring. Characters are there. I need one
Alex,
more.
Alex, you know I'm going to follow up on this.
Of course, yes. I know. I'm sitting here thinking, I think I'll have another cup of coffee.
Tell the damn story. Smash the like and subscribe. We love writing styles and writing rituals. So you start with character. How much detail do you put in to your writing about, let's say, your main character, and then I'm going to follow up with what's the difference for secondary and third tier characters?
bucket loads. I do bucket loads. I have a list. I use the Save the Cat kind of thing, and I've got Scrivener, and so I've got the characters there. And as I write, I add, like, she needs a birthday, and it goes,
To be Alex for a minute, for those of you who don't know, Scrivener is a writing program. Okay, back to us.
Plot. You can actually write a full book in it. I just use it to get the plot and the characters and keep them safely tucked away. I will go right into their likes, their dislikes, how they look, background a little bit, their mannerisms, their foibles. I have a little thing where when I get stressed out, I start hiccuping.
Okay.
And so does my daughter. It's a little, they say it's probably Tourette's, and we're like, whatever. So luckily I'm not hiccuping today. And she's got that little thing that goes on. Stuff that may never be needed, but inform them. And then usually, eventually it is needed. It comes around and it becomes important.
I absolutely believe the more you know about characters, the more you see your story.
We say that so many times, even some of my students at the academy where I teach screenwriting. But you said that. I said, okay, fine. And I'll go quiet about it for a day or two or maybe a couple of weeks when I'm working on a project. And then I'll come up with this problem. I don't know what she should say here. I don't know what my character should do here. I said, tell me about your character. And I'll ask a couple of questions. I don't know. I haven't decided. And then you're wondering why you don't know what your character should say or do in this given situation.
Character is his character.
It is. And nobody wants to read about somebody that they're not interested in or isn't interested in. Three-dimensional. And then they have something to learn. If they don't have, they can't be perfect. Nobody wants to read about perfect people. Just make you bad about yourself, at least for me. You all feel the same way. Yeah.
I find the specific everyday details help bring characters to life. In A Simple Rebellion.
One of his books.
Yeah, main character is standing there eating Cheerios. He's a widower. And the phone rings, and it's his son saying, Dad, just checking. I'm hoping you're not eating Cheerios again for dinner. Well, you got to, and he's, we just had steak and asparagus. And it's those little specific things, I think, that help. And you only get that stuff by going around thinking about your character. Like you say, writing about asking questions about your character. Yeah, I like having questions about characters.
I have one. Is it regular Cheerios or Honey Nut?
Usually regular Cheerios.
Yeah, okay, okay.
Personally, a good friend for all my life. Yeah, write what you know, right?
Yeah.
So, characters and the cast of characters, for you, rubbing them together, you get the red herrings. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I think you need, for me, I need to have like two love triangles going on at all times. And cozy mysteries aren't about romance, but the romance is about cozy mystery because it ups the ante. Like it increases the stakes. It makes it more important that she figure out, is he the killer? And it's in those relationships. If you're wanting to commit murder, you better have a pretty good motive.
Yeah, true. Mm.
And you are most likely to be murdered by your boyfriend or your spouse or partner. Not that's the murderer in any of mine.
I'll tell you what, keeps me up at night. Get that one eye looking over.
I divorced right now. No, it's, And so the other thing is that money, all of the motivators, money, opportunity, all of those things. And so you build it in and it's not like you're going to kill somebody you don't know. So they need to be a part of their world. And you might for many, but not you. Yeah, I think that's important. I really believe like the flawed part, you need to know what are they going to learn as this goes on? How are they going to change? Rose's journey, very much the hero's journey. And Ivy's probably learning what I'm learning. So I relate to it. It's trust. Trust is really hard for people. Trust is impossible for me and it's impossible for Ivy. That I settle that and set that up. And then I make a plan for the story. And I told Alex this last time. I get about halfway through and one of those characters just emerges as so much stronger than I ever planned them to be.
Yep.
The story goes left, but it's always better than what I planned.
Yeah. And again, it's that preparation of character building and getting to know them. And then you can't force it. You can't predict it. But when the character starts making demands or showing up when you didn't plan that character show up and solving problems, you know you're on to something. Yeah, that's great stuff. And that's all part of what happened with Booked for Murder.
Exactly.
See how I get that name in there, Alex?
Yeah, very nicely done. I was quite smooth. Yeah. We are almost out of time. And so I wanted to make sure that you, Shannon, had an opportunity, as you did the last time, to share any particular thoughts or advice or whatever that you might want to offer to the world out there, or even just comment on something that you've discovered for yourself in terms of the process, because you've actually shared your personal challenges as well as your creative challenges. So just curious, is there anything in particular you'd like to say or at this time?
Yeah. When I wrote the first book, I wrote it because I needed to resolve my need to keep changing things for people and having people see the world differently. That was my motivator. But I didn't know anything about writing. And frankly, I'm pretty sure I have dysgraphia. My handwriting is atrocious. It's not like I sat down and long-handed it. That didn't happen. But I was, not that I lacked confidence, but I just didn't think about it. It was actually my sister that was pushing me to do it. And I think if I was going to talk to somebody else, I would say, just write the damn story.
Just write the damn story.
Write the damn story. That's our our new spinoff show, starring Shannon.
And I am really surprised at how that went, because I knew nothing. I knew nothing. And then I sent it in and a publisher picked it up. That's very rare. That doesn't usually happen.
Yeah.
Heavens, because I needed an editor. I needed a proofreader. You need those things. Mm-hmm. Publishers are fabulous if you have them. I do think, though, that I joined a group called Storytellers or Storymakers that I just ran into online. And it looked like it was by my daughter's house, so I could ride off a trip to see my daughter, which was really great. And I met some people there that knew more than I did and that were selling $100,000 worth of books and really doing well, better than I was, for sure. And they put us in a little writing group and we worked together. And I think that was, if you want to write a book, I think find a group of people that know more than you do. Writing. And then you have people like Jessica that you can call up and say, I don't even know how to do this. What should I do?
You need a couple of lucky breaks with that, because you can get the other side of writing groups, and you can get people who are not like her, and they are dipping into your pocket. So you have to go in with eyes open. But if you get that lucky break,
do not spend money on it. Don't. I paid for the conference, and that was great. And I pay the members, because I do the group, and I have another group I belong to, Author Ready, and I pay the. I'm a gold founder, so it costs me very little every month so that I can get into the retreats and video stuff. But if somebody calls you and wants $5,000 to help you write your first book.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, as soon as you get that 5Gs, call me up and you can help me write my book.
Yep.
I've had 50 calls lately. We've found Murder Takes a Selfie and we want to make it into a movie. And I'm like, how much? 5 minutes later, $10,000 to write your screenplay. Okay, if I want to write a screenplay, I will write a screenplay. Thank you. Bye.
Yep.
So be careful.
Yeah. Chris, did you have anything you wanted to share?
I wanted to thank you, Shannon, because you were brave enough to dive deep into intense background, which I tell you what, I'm going to ask for forgiveness, because I came into this thinking, cozy mysteries. This is going to be an easy one. It'll be light and airy. And then we went in a whole different direction. And I thought it was fascinating. And I think anyone who listens is going to want to take a peek at the Booked for Murder. And then maybe others as well. But there it is. Really, as far as making your case for why people should try your stuff, excellent job. So thank you very much. What a great guest.
She was wonderful the last time, too.
Yeah, listen.
I'm jealous.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been fun. It's always been fun with you, and I appreciate it. So it's good. Well,
thank you.
With Volume 2, The Further Adventures of Ivy, when that comes out, we got to do this again.
All right.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
Try Rice Krispie treats made with Cheerios.
Wow, that's interesting.
And see, I'm totally the plain Cheerios with bananas kind of guy. And give me an episode of the Lone Ranger, and I'm a very happy boy.
Yes. There you go.
There you go. So, everybody, please, as Chris was saying several times during the episode, subscribe, hit that like button, all that stuff. Please go out and locate your copy of Book for Murder by the lovely Shannon Simmons. And, of course, Chris, next time we'll talk more about some of your publications because that's all out right now. There's a lot of good stuff that's coming out in January, February of this year.
As Shannon will be able to attest, I have no idea, but I'm sure that you went through the Amazon grinder too,
yes.
Right? Where one little thing is off, and you got to fix it and you just resubmit. One other thing is off. They don't give you, they do try to give you a list, but then there's always one other thing. And I've been going through the grinder for about 5 days now.
But it's going to be worth it.
We hope. I tell you, the thing
I'm sorry, that wasn't up for debate. It's going to be worth it. Those are my words. Okay?
Yes, I was an altar boy, so always got to be humble.
Okay, so everybody, keep your ear up because we will definitely keep you posted on all the good stuff coming out through Tell the Damn Story and wonderful people who've been a part of these episodes.
Shannon, best success with Book for Murder.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Peace. Thanks.